There is a very strong voice amongst women that don't really understand a woman who genuinely loves pushing herself physically and enjoying that and getting real pleasure from that. It's very often tainted with a kind of, oh, there's an issue there. She's over-exercising, or it's coming from a place of a problem. And as I've more recently been hanging out with people who do love doing that and who do love running, it's become so much easier for me to listen to the voice that says, yes, run faster. Yes, get out there in the rain and the cold. You're not trying to do other people down. You're not trying to show off. You're doing what you love doing. And that's very, very important. You have to be in the right room. Be in the room with people who understand you and who encourage you.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast, the first of 2024. I'm Craig Lewis, and as we cough and choke our way through the first few months of the year, we're going to dive into another extraordinary story from the world of everyday runners, with this week's guest being Liz Fraser. Best known as a writer and broadcaster whose credits range from the BBC and The Times to best-selling author, Liz is also a passionate runner. She has embraced the sport from a young age when her mother, a coach for the Oxford City Athletics Club, introduced her to it. Running has also helped Liz, who is the UK's first National Centre for Domestic Violence ambassador and whose memoir, Coming Clean, tells her story as the partner of an alcoholic with her mental health, providing solace in hard times. With her 50th birthday approaching in October, Liz is now hoping to run her first official marathon and to roll back the years and run a sub-25k and a sub-40 10k. We talked about how it's okay for women to fiercely pursue their running goals and the joy of running in the rain. But I started our conversation by asking Liz when she first started running.
Right, well, I mean, I'm nearly 50, so I'm going to be 50 this year. And I would say that running, in my awareness of running, you know, it's been in my life since I can remember, as young as five or six, which, like many people who become adult runners, of course, came through my parents. And the runner of the two of my parents was my mum. My mother comes from the Czech Republic. So in Czechoslovakia, you know, there was a lot of sport encouraged by the government. You know, it was something that the government was very keen for people to engage in was sport. And there were lots of fantastic athletics clubs and tennis courts and all sorts. And she was a 400 meter hurdler in her sort of university days and going on. So when we were very young, and she then lived in the UK, she was coaching the Colts, I think they were called, in the Oxford City Athletics Club. My brother was a very, very accomplished sprinter. And so I was just sort of aware of running as a thing that my mom did, my brother did. We'd sometimes go and watch running events. And I suppose it just seeps in. And that competitive, you know, that sort of inner competitive nature to, I want to run faster, I want to win races, kind of from a very young age, yeah.
And did it always stay with you? And in what formats did it come out? Were you always, I want to do races, or was it just, I want to run to keep fit, or both?
Actually, that's a really interesting question that I probably haven't asked myself very often, because now I run and I run races. But no, I didn't for ages, actually. I ran at school, obviously, once a year at the school sports day. So I'd get thrown onto the grass athletics track and told to run. I didn't start running, as in on a track and trying to run better, till I went to university. So I was in the Cambridge University Athletics Club, and their longer distance thing is called the Hare and Hounds. But I was really bad. I mean, and I don't say that in a self-deprecating way. I was really rubbish. I think they just needed people. And I was also overtraining and under-eating. You know, I had an eating disorder at that point in my life. So from sort of 16 up to early 20s. So there was definitely an unhealthy side to my running. But it was also something that I could do. And I met nice people through it. And then I had kids. I had my first daughter when I was 23 and my second when I was 25. And it was really after that that I remember starting like a race for life. You know, that was sort of starting up This would have been in 2003. Is that right? Yeah, he was born in 2003. So I do the occasional Race for Life and then a bit more and then the London 10K and it all just snowballed from there. And my running's really, really gone up and up from the age of 30 to 50, definitely.
Yeah, and I think from what I've seen that you've written on your Instagram and so on, you've kind of been mainly half marathons, but getting faster and faster at those.
I'd say no. I'd say like a lot of runners, I started on the shorter stuff. So Race for Life, originally five. So at university, oh my God, at university, I was doing 1500s, which was ridiculous. I would come last by a long, long way. I'm not a 1500 meter runner. So 5Ks is where it started. And, my PB, my 5K PB is still, God, it's something like 18 minutes, which is okay. And then the Race for Life sort of became 10Ks as well. And then the Oxford has a town and gown every May or so. And then I remember 10K was really long for me. I was like, what? I have to run for 40 minutes? That's quite a long time. But, that would have been in my later 30s that my 10K time was then, 37, 37 and a half minutes, which was that remains my PB. I can't go anywhere near that now. And my first half marathon was the Cambridge Half Marathon in about 2000 and I don't know, maybe 2014, something like that. And again, total shock to the system, running for an hour and a half. It just seemed impossible to me because, you run a half hard, don't you? You don't really settle at any point. And I am yet to run a marathon in a race, although I did run my first marathon distance about 3 weeks ago. Yay! It was horrible.
Well, I was going to ask you about this because I did see that post that you'd completed that first marathon. In from memory, a pretty res well more than respectable time actually. But yeah, I think marathon is the big goal now, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I have to put in brackets. It was a very respectable time, but there was a lot of stoppage. So actual moving time, yeah, it was like 3.5 hours or something. But I think I was out for 4.5 hours.
Right.
But yes, I didn't intend to do it. We'd been chatting about it, and I was talking with someone who does a lot of ultra marathons, at which point, when you're talking 50, 70, 100 miles, suddenly you think 26 is nothing. You literally just do it. So I sort of said, jokingly, but it's true. I set out with a bottle of water and a Werther's Original in my back pocket to see how I got on. But me being me, obviously, how I got on was as far as I could reasonably go and keep standing. So I got to the half marathon point and then thought, well, if I turn around now, that's a marathon. It was hilly. It was partly on the Isle of Skye. So it did have quite a lot of rises. And honestly, the last 5K was just, I was broken. It's pathetic. I was absolutely broken.
Well, I think that is the joy of joy and pain of marathon running, isn't it? Because I mean, I've done two or three now, and I've been broken on the last 5 to 10K of all of them. It
Well,
doesn't.
tell me about that. I mean, does it get better? Do you just get, I mean, it must get easier, right? I hope. Give me something.
Not for me yet, but from people I know, yes. And I have to be honest, I've done, like I say, I've done three marathons. The third was actually an ultra attempt that went wrong. So
But
it was
take
a,
it. That's a marathon.
but I still took the marathon out of it. Yeah. The other two were 5 and then 10 years ago. And really, I didn't train very well or very properly for them. So I'm hoping to do it properly again this year. But interestingly, I did do a 50K last year and found that much easier and didn't break down, partly because I was trying to run slower, but also partly just because I got used to it and trained a bit better. So let's take that as a yes, it gets better.
Okay, and you said the word train there. See, there's the good idea, isn't it? I could try training. It's been a running joke between me and all my kind of slightly more serious runner friends that Liz's training technique is just sit down, work all day, and then at some point stand up, run as fast as I can, and then sit back down again. That this is my training, and I think it's enough now. I think that's enough. I'm going to try to improve because you know, I'm sure we'll talk about sort of goals for the year in the future, but I think particularly when you're coming up to an age milestone, you know, and 50 is probably the last cutoff where you can have any dreams of a sub 40 10K semi easily. I that is my goal, but that's going to become harder from now on, and a much more realistic target will be the halves and the marathons and so on. But I actually find what frustrates me about the longer distances is that I feel I have it in me. I've got the power, I've got the strength, and I have the stamina. But mechanically, something happens to my knees around about the 8-9 mile mark, you know, which is not very far into a race. And you said there about, you know, your 50, you found actually easier because you were running slower. So that was the idea with this sort of ha-ha marathon that I ran. The idea was run slower. And I did. And I would say that I got a lot further before the knee and hip and everything issues kicked in, but they did kick in. And when they do, there's nothing you can do, right? If you can't bend your knee from pain, then that's your limit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's two things about that, and I'm neither a coach or a physiotherapist, but from conversations I've had with people that you know, as long as you haven't done any sort of long-term damage in there that might be able to be, you know, you might be able to be improved through physio. But from what you were saying earlier, sit around all day, go out and run kind of technique, you might want to look at sort of incorporating a bit of strength training in there to try and work on the lower body, on to give the knees some support. And that might be the solution you need. But as I say, there's proper coaches and proper physios out there who'd be able to give you much better advice than me.
Yeah. And actually, I'll make a bit facetious, you know, to be fair to people listening, that's not all I do. Do you know what I mean? I go to the gym. And actually, I think for female listeners particularly, that's really something that I always want to emphasize in my writing and in interviews like this. Weight training, weight bearing, gym. When I started going to the gym, I mean, the first gym that I went into would have been at university, but that didn't really count. It was like a back room where the boxers went. But I remember in my, you know, sort of mid-20s going to my local gym, I was the only woman in there. And women were not going to the gym in the early 2000s. It was very unusual. You know, I have quite a lot of self-confidence in that regard, in the physical setup, because I know that I'm competent, so it's okay. But I think a lot of women didn't feel comfortable, you know, lifting weights a long time ago. And they were also frightened of bulking up, which, you know, you don't necessarily do. And it's so good for women's, you know, sort of against osteoporosis, posture and general health to do weights. So, yeah, I really do. So it's not quite right to say, it's not quite true to say that I sit, that I run, I come back. But I don't do exercises which would help with the specific problems that I have. There you go. So that's one thing I want to really tackle this year as well, and go and see a specialist who will, you know, analyze my gait at last and invest in that, you know, because I'm not going to get any better, am I, if I just sit here thinking about it.
You know, I find it in my own running as well, that there's these two voices in my head. One which just says, just go out and enjoy it. You didn't start doing running to do strength training. You didn't start doing it to win races. You weren't really worried about what times you were doing. And then there's this other voice that says, yeah, but if you're going to get better and if you're going to get injured less, then you need to do all these other things. And they kind of compete with each other in my brain.
Oh, totally. And actually, of those two, you know, get injured less, I would say, is becoming the priority, you know, as I get older. And, you know, those two voices are really... they're very important to decide which one you listen to the most. And that's something that I have found. It depends who you hang out with, basically. If you hang out with people who don't understand why you want to run further and faster and better, I find that, I don't know about men, I don't know about that, how you guys kind of communicate in that way, but there is a very strong voice amongst women that don't really understand a woman who genuinely loves pushing herself physically and enjoying that and getting real pleasure from that. It's very often tainted with a kind of, oh, there's an issue there. She's over-exercising, or it's coming from a place of a problem. And as I've more recently been hanging out with people who do love doing that and who do love running, it's become so much easier for me to listen to the voice that says, yes, run faster. Yes, get out there in the rain and the cold. You're not trying to do other people down. You're not trying to show off. You're doing what you love doing. And that's very, very important. You have to be in the right room. Be in the room with people who understand you and who encourage you. Don't be in the room with people who say, you did a park run, it was all right, so have a cup of tea. It's like, well, which is fine. If that's okay, that's fine. It's just not for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and there is a bit about finding your kind of tribe within the running community and within communities generally. I mean, I've kind of got different ones from people who I might go to the pub with, and who would have different attitudes to people who I go running with. And sometimes it's just about having entirely different conversations with those two groups of people.
And everybody respecting, how everybody is, and so, if I say, oh, go and run a park run, that's fine. It is great if for you running a park run is a real achievement. That is fantastic. If you walk around the block and that makes you feel good and keeps your health, then great. But I never compare myself with other people. I compare myself with the best version of myself that I think I can achieve, which always then sounds very strange when you're happy to beat other people in a race. So that's a slightly different thing. It is a lovely thing to run faster than other people, but still at the end of the day, I compete against, I can do better. If I can do better at anything, writing, parenting, being a friend, whatever it might be, then I want to be better, right? Then I make no apology for that at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, people may know you, as you've mentioned, as a writer, as a broadcaster, and you've written quite a lot about your family, about your own experiences, about being a victim of domestic abuse and some of the trials that you had to go through. I mean, feel free to talk about that as much or as little as you want, but I suppose the question in terms of this podcast is how much, if at all, did running help you to cope with some of those challenges?
Yeah, I mean it's a great question and it's a fair question and thank you. I don't talk about the specifics anymore in public. There's enough written about it. If people want to go and read my book, they can, and so on. But my running has always been a source of positivity to me, whether that's improving my mental health, in keeping me physically strong, which in certain circumstances in life, it proves very useful to be physically strong if one, needs to be at a certain time. But really, I think it was the mental health benefit. And, people listening to this, I'm sure there will be many, many of your running listeners who run for the mental health benefit as much as anything else. And actually, I remember in some of the very difficult times of my life, running can bring out strange things in you, can't it? Because it's this rhythm and you get into an almost a meditative state. I used to cry. I used to absolutely weep on longer runs. I would have to stop running because your throat constricts. And when whatever it was just released, I would cry and cry and cry, and I'd have to stop and really focus on opening the airwaves and getting the breathing going. And then off I'd go. Being very angry was also a very good time to be running. I ran my fastest races always either very angry or very in love. So those are the two situations where I will run really fast. But certainly the running for me has been as much a part of my general health and well-being as anything I can do for myself physically. It was really interesting. Earlier this year, I had the beginnings of some therapy for what was going to be something called EMDR, which people may have heard of. It's eye movement desensitization reprogramming or something, EMDR. And it's a very, very well established, but very little understood treatment for trauma, for PTSD, and it's a trauma therapy. So we never actually got to do any because it turned out that I didn't need that in the end. But the basis of EMDR therapy is something called bilateral stimulation. So as I'm talking to you, people can't see this, but if you tap one shoulder and tap left, tap right, tap left, it's sort of tapping, and you're stimulating the left side and the right side, and this is your bilateral stimulation. And it was discovered, as it were, by an American scientist who'd gone out for a walk. And she just found that when she was walking, this left, right, left, right, left, right, just settled some of these traumatic thoughts or feelings. That's really, really potted and oversimplified, you know, explanation of sort of where it comes from. But if you think of an activity like running, and you know, because you run long distances, it's that, dun, 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 you know, you can, some people count. I count two in, four out, two in, four out, two in, four out, all the way when I run, except in a race when I'm just breathing to survive. But there is something about that. It's marching. It's the same left, right, left, right. It gets you into a meditation or a way of your brain working where it can process, it can sort stuff out. And I think that is one of the greatest advantages of running for me, that meditative sort of side of it.
I mean, I think I've spoken to lots of people, including at least two who've had issues with PTSD, who have found running to make a massive difference. But another thing that has come up previously with some people I've spoken to is the potential danger of running in terms of mental health issues, of it, I suppose, it almost being a sticking plaster. So it helps, you go out and run, but it doesn't solve the underlying issues necessarily. Is that sort of something you've come across? Or,
well, first of all, I'm interested, you know, I'm really happy to hear that you've spoken to other people who found that it's helped them in terms of PTSD type thing, type sort of symptoms. I there's a great book to be written. I really want to write a book about running for PTSD and ADHD. I think there's not enough been written about that. So that's been sort of down the line. I don't know. Certainly, I can't say for myself that it's sort of, you know, plastered over some of the issues, but I could see how it could, that you'd always, just as soon as you feel anything coming on, it's like, right, I'm going to go for a run and then I'll feel much better. I mean, we're a funny sort, aren't we, runners? We are. We are most certainly different. Those of us who like running, you know, endurance type running and long distance type running, I don't know many sprinters, to be honest, so I don't really know what kind of mindset they have. But it's a very strange thing, isn't it, to want to go out in the lashing rain and the wind and the cold and do something which, let's face it, is pretty unpleasant for almost the entire time that you're doing it. So what is that all about? That kind of really interests me.
Yeah, well, that was something actually that I saw you posting about in the last few days, was getting out there in the pouring rain and the terrible conditions we're getting at the moment, coming back and going, that was great, I feel a lot better now.
Yeah, but you do, don't you? And actually, I love running in bad weather. I get, when it's raining, windy, raining, dark, it's an elation. It's like, you know, it's like the best sex in the world. This is like, that's nothing. That's nothing on this. This is absolute ecstatic. All the endorphins, all the adrenaline, all the yes, all the, I don't know if there's oxytocin involved in it, but it's a high, right? Well, it is for me. It's a huge high. And the worse the weather, and not quite the worse the weather, the better, but it's great. So there is certainly something of that. And, you know, there's the having done it, isn't there? There's that feeling of, I did it. I bloody did it. And it was hard, but I did it. There's very little satisfaction for me in going out for a nice run on a beautiful, sunny, hot day. And I sort of go out for a 40-minute run. It doesn't really do it for me. Like, it's done, it's nice, but I'd much rather run in the cold and the wind and the rain.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something a little bit about connecting with our older selves, our spirits from generations, thousands and thousands of years ago and so on, when people would be out hunting in horrendous conditions, and it's just kind of that human spirit that we've left behind when we're sitting on computers and looking at our mobile phones, but there it is. And we can connect with it when we're out running in awful conditions.
Almost certainly. And actually, you touched on something there which we haven't talked about yet, but it's whether you run alone or run with other people. And I run alone. So I'm a lone runner. I have been, you know, yeah, I was in various athletics clubs here and there, but it doesn't work for me sort of in a practical way because I have to run when I'm ready to run around children and freelance work and so on. But actually, I just don't like it. However, under race conditions, I mean, isn't it just the loveliest thing when you're struggling in a race and someone comes and shoulders you and just sits there and goes, come on, you know, and I love doing that for other people as well. It's so nice. And you think you haven't got anything left to give. And suddenly, yeah, you've got a lot to give, actually. Now it's okay. And so that kind of comradeship and camaraderie I love, and I love when you cross the line at the end and you get the big sweaty hug and it's all disgusting and lovely. I like that a lot. But in training, I train alone. Do you train in a thing? Do you train in a group?
So I used to train on my own all the time. My wife is a fitness instructor, Michelle, who does this podcast, and she has a running group with that. So I've kind of got a lot more used to running with other people and enjoying that a lot more. But I tend to stick on music or a podcast and go out and lose myself in wherever I am. I do really enjoy that feeling. Interestingly, in races, I'm kind of a bit more, not as nice to other runners as you are. I tend to spot, rather than encouraging the person just in front, I'll tend to try and hunt them down to improve.
Oh, don't you worry. I'm the same. No, absolutely. Right. I'm taking you and I'm taking you.
But, yeah.
If there's someone that's sort of a little bit towards the end, you're like, come on, you've got this. I think it just depends on the race, doesn't it? And the day. Certainly my running improves when I run, you know, in a group of any variety, you know. Mm. It's always the thing. I can't remember which running athletics club it would have been at, but I definitely recall running. Maybe I think it was when I was in Cambridge, actually. There was a group of guys, a couple of Italian runners, these Italian men that just, they weigh about 3 stone and they just run really, really fast. And they're like 75.
Yeah.
A group of Italian guys that we used to pass each other kind of down the river. That's right. And I remember a few times they sort of picked me up and I would then run with them. And I really remember thinking, God, you can, that was 10% faster, that run, than you thought what you could do. So in that sense, I think it would probably benefit me at a certain point to go back to, you know, join a club and go, all right, come on. If I want my, if I want to reach my goals for this year, which I will share with you at some point in this podcast, then maybe that might be the way forward.
Yeah, I will get onto the goals because we are slightly running out of time. But I just had one other quick question that pops into my head on that running alone subject. What is the sort of attitude you get from either fellow runners or your peers to you running alone as a woman?
Well, interestingly, I don't get a lot of discussion. I don't chat a lot with other runners because, and God, this is going to sound so bad, but, you know, I run pretty well, and so most of my friends, I can't really talk about running with them so much because what I would say is going to sound patronizing or kind of, you know, like, oh yeah, well, I'm so great at this, and I don't mean it that way at all. I do get comments on social media sometimes from people saying, you know, you run alone and you run alone at night. Oh, don't you think that's, you know, a risky thing to suggest that other people should do? To which I always say, I never suggest anybody should do anything. You know, I do what I do. And sometimes that inspires people. It depends where I'm running, you know. And also, I do figure that I run faster than most people. So if there's going to be any issue, I can probably run faster than most people who are trying to cause a problem. But that's a little bit sort of casual to say that. And you have to really run only where you feel safe to run. You know, if you live in the countryside in the Yorkshire Dales, then that's one thing. Maybe you feel safe there or less safe there than you running in central Manchester or London. I don't know. I read certainly on social media far too many stories of women who just don't want to go out. They genuinely don't feel safe to do so. And that makes me quite angry on their behalf and very sad because, you know, it just should not should not be that way at all. No, if you don't feel safe doing it, you don't do it. End of story.
I think that's right. And I think actually the biggest thing is it's got to be, people shouldn't be telling women or indeed anybody not to do something. It's whether they feel safe and whether they want to do it. That's kind of my thoughts on it for what they're worth. But as I said, we are sort of running out of time slightly, and I do want to talk about goals for this year. We know the marathon is one of those. What else do you have planned and what's coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I've set myself three sort of times. At 5K, I'd like to do a sub 20 minute park run. It would be nice to have that back. The last one I did, I think, was 2013 or 2020 something. It's around about that mark. So it's sort of frustratingly stupid amount over 20. So sub 20.
I'm just going to, my best park run is 20:06.
Oh, no. Come on.
I know.
Can you pull it down, do you think?
Do you know what? Yeah. I'm not sure. I have to admit that that's my next is 2032, and I did that at Yarborough Park Run. And if anyone's ever done Yarborough, it is the flattest course ever.
Oh,
it's
no.
Basically like running at an airfield. So if I can't, I might have to go back to Yarborough. That could be the only way I can do it.
Well, I'm going there. That sounds great. I do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's round and round, and it goes slightly up and slightly down. Too many corners and hairpin bends. It's no good. So that's that.
Yeah.
10K. I really need to come under 40, comfortably under 40. So we've got a sub 25, a sub 40:10, and my half marathon PB is 1:23. Okay, it was a little while ago, but I was in my 40s. I'm now at the moment, if I go for a half marathon training run, it's 1 hour 40. It's like 20 minutes longer. But if I could bring that down to 1 hour 25. I would be absolutely ecstatic. I would be so happy to have that one more time in my life. And a marathon, I'll run one. I've actually, just before we came on to record this, I was going through my diary for the year, you know, having a look, and I've gone through the whole year, you know, running events in the UK for the whole year. I need to do the same in Europe, and I'm just going to pick them. But the Oxford half is in October. So that's the big one for me. And then I'll just pick a marathon. I reckon it's going to be Venice. I think it'll be the Venice Marathon in October, which is when my birthday is. I'm telling you that now so that you've got plenty of time to get ready for my big birthday.
Yeah, everyone, this is when Liz's birthday is. Start saving up now.
I didn't warn you. 4th of October, I'll be 50. You know, let's just park that there. But yeah, those are the goals. And, you know, got to have them. You got to try. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, definitely. And interested, actually, that was something else I was going to ask you about. You mentioned Venice. You've done quite a lot of running abroad, haven't you? That's something which you definitely get involved in.
Yeah. And I mean, isn't that the great thing about running? You know, all you need is, in fact, you don't even need a pair of trainers. You just need yourself. So yeah, everywhere we go on holiday, it was always like, where's mummy? Oh, mummy's gone for a run, you know, wherever we'd be. And you see so much more of a place if you run. You know, you get to smell and hear and observe things far, far better. But yeah, I ran in Annecy earlier this year. I ran in Nice. I ran in Sicily. I ran in Verona. I spend a lot of time in Venice. That's my sort of second home. Venice is great for running, guys. Like, don't ever think that Venice is not a good place for running. It is a great place for running. But there's no park run in Venice, I noticed earlier this year. So I should start it. I reckon I could. There's one in Treviso, which is nearby. Yeah. I reckon I could be the starter of the Venice park run. Huh?
That would be good. Well, again, Michelle wants to do an Italian park run this year. So set it up and she'll come up and run it.
Good. Come over, guys. It's flat. It, amazingly enough, given that it's an island in the lagoon, is very, very flat.
Well, Liz, thank you so much for joining us on Running Tales. We've gone over a lot of things. We're going to set up a park run in Venice. And,
okay, this is it. Team effort.
And do a marathon. Superb. Thank you so much for joining me today on Running Tales.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks again to Liz Fraser for joining me on this week's Running Tales podcast. I hope you enjoyed the podcast as much as I did. If you did, please give us a positive rating or review wherever you listened. It really does help other people to find the podcast and listen to incredible stories like that of Liz Fraser. You can also find our newsletter on Substack, runningtales.substack.co.uk. where you can read written versions of these podcasts, as well as all the latest news from the running world. You can also sample some of Liz's writing there on her Substack, lizfraser.substack.com, where under the title Flying Solo, she charts and celebrates what everyone can do by ourselves, from travel and adventure to running and fitness, mental health and personal challenges to growth. Her Substack charts the struggles and triumphs of self towards personal freedom. So go and check that one out as well. Thanks again for joining us on the Running Tales podcast this week, and I look forward to seeing you again next week for another Running Tale.